What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website, and you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning in to the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit subscribe there. Give it 5 stars on Spotify. And check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month on Spotify. Those are available every first of the month. And the links for those will be in the episode notes. Hope everyone is doing well out there. I just got back from the Tree Fort Music Fest out in Boise, Idaho. Had such a killer time out there. It was my 4th time going to the Tree Fort Fest, and just an inspiring weekend. Saw so much amazing music, some artists that I've been wanting to see for a really long time, and I recorded a few podcasts out there, which will drop soon. And I also managed to crush a couple tuna sandwiches, so new Tuna Boy vids also on the way. If you're not hip to the tuna sandwich reviews I've been doing, you can find the Tuna Boy Instagram account as well as the TikTok through my Dan Cable Presents content. You know, I'm just out here reviewing tuna sandwiches because I love them. They're near and dear to my heart, and it's just been so fun reviewing those things. And people seem to like it, which is also very cool. Didn't think I would be, you know, 25 videos deep into reviewing these sandwiches, but that's where I'm at with my life. But we're not here to talk about tuna sandwiches today. We are we're here to get into episode 404 of the podcast with Portland-based singer-songwriter AC Sapphire. Had a great time chatting with AC a couple weeks ago. She just dropped a brand new record called December 32nd, which is available wherever you listen to music. There is some really amazing tunes on it, and some of them I've been listening to on the daily. And I recently got to see AC's album release show over at Mississippi Studios here in Portland, Oregon, and just a beautiful performance. It was my first time getting to hang out with AC. We had never met in person, just been exchanging some emails over the last month or so, and I just really appreciate her making time for me. And that December 32nd record, like I said, is available wherever you stream music via American Standard Time Records. I've had a few artists from American Standard Time on the podcast in the past, including AC Sapphire's collaborative partner Kendall Lujan, who makes really amazing music. She's been on the cast before. And Desolation Horse, who I met out at last year's Tree Fort, and I got to see a play a set this year. It was one of my favorite sets of the festival, and it was the way I closed things out on Saturday night, seeing Coop and his amazing band. Just great performance, one of the ones that definitely stuck with me. And I did not stick around for the music on Sunday because I had been out there since Tuesday. So that was actually the way that I not only closed out Saturday night, but it was the way I closed out my festival. So, Coop, thank you for the amazing set. Definitely check out the Desolation Horse music and everything else coming out on American Standard Time. The links for that December 32nd record from AC Sapphire will definitely be in the episode notes, so check that out. And we're going to get into this thing. Episode 404 with AC Sapphire, and kicking off the episode with one of my favorite tracks from that December 32nd record. This one is called Sibling Rivalry. Let's do the damn thing.
In the backyard, we dug holes, looking for treasure. All the neighborhood kids were on our side.
They're not like hanging around your head. That is totally cool too.
And yeah, if I like lean back.
Yeah, be comfy. Get comfy. Okay. AC.
I might move around.
You're all right. You're okay. So if you do move, just, you know, move that mic with you.
Okay.
All right. I'll make the sound solid. Well, I'm excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
I love your new record, December 32nd. I've been listening to it quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, songwriting is so good. And I'm
thank you.
Super stoked that I got to see your album release show last week. That was very cool. That was the first time that I got to see you play music live.
Oh.
Other than I saw you sing some songs with Kendall, uh-huh. I think maybe at Tree Fort last year.
Oh, no. You were at that show in the snow.
Yeah, I was. I actually didn't see the Calico set. I saw you sang like a couple songs with her maybe during one of her solo sets.
Yes,
at,
okay.
The coffee
yes.
shop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the only other time that I ever saw you sing live. But yeah, your voice is incredible.
Thank you.
The songs on the new record are so good. So it was really cool to see it in action, see it live. yeah, just to start, talk to me about like what your early memories of music are.
My earliest memories of music is me and my two sisters, older sister Cass, younger sister Beatrice. We started this group called, at first it was called the ABC Sisters, and that was due to my dad saying that that was a good name, and that we should go by the ABC Sisters. And I was like four. I was probably like maybe five or six. My sister was seven or eight.
Okay.
And the other one was younger than that. And then we eventually moved on to the name the Sapphire Sisters.
Okay.
And, you know, me and my older sister wrote the songs, and then my younger sister danced, did like interpretive dancing, and we would perform for our grandparents when they would come over. We had like a bunk bed that was missing the bed at the bottom. So we just put like a curtain over it, and that was like our stage underneath there. So anyway.
So super early on, you got exposed singing.
Yeah, my mom played classical piano. I think she taught herself classical piano like while she was pregnant. And my older sister, like when I mean, she probably started playing piano when she was like, I want to say she was like 4 years old or 3 years old. And she was like kind of like a prodigy.
Okay.
She was like really good. And so I kind of grew up with her playing piano. And yeah. And my dad, he was a doo-wop singer in Brooklyn when he was younger. So he, talk about record collection. My dad, I mean, it's insane how many like records that man has. I mean, a whole, you know, room full. And we grew up with him just nonstop playing a lot of like doo-wop and rhythm and blues.
Yeah.
A lot of different stuff, but a lot of doo-wop and rhythm and blues.
So it was very much like around you at all times.
At all times.
Okay.
Yeah.
And big family. Lots of siblings.
It's true.
You have like eight siblings?
Seven siblings, okay. So it's eight kids. Damn. Yeah. Yep.
And where was this all happening? Where'd you grow up?
About like an hour, 45 minutes outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
Little town called Downingtown.
All right.
Downingtown.
You said like an hour outside of Philly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, without traffic, you could get there in 30 minutes, but there's never going to be a time that there's not traffic unless it's like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. And did you yourself like start writing songs from a pretty young age?
So, yeah, like I remember, so we were homeschooled, and we went to like a 1 day a week school. But even before I think I started going to school in that 1 day a week school, which I was like, I don't remember ages, but basically my sister was taking a poetry class. And I remember she like came home and she read William Butler Yeats to me. And it was like, "Oh, come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's too full of weeping for you to understand."
Dang, you still remember this?
I don't know if I could recite the whole entire poem, but it's not very long, but that's like one of the stanzas. And that was just like, when I heard, you know, when I heard William Butler Yeats, I was like, I mean, it was like some kind of like volcano erupted inside of me of just like yearning of like, knowing that there was like, I wanted to express all of this stuff. And it was like, oh my gosh, I can, like, there's these people called poets and they can do that. And so, I mean, I didn't know how to write at the time. So I would tell my sister what to write and she would write it for me. But yeah, I think like, yeah, poetry was like very formative for me.
Was like the entry point before the song,
before songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in a way like that, you know, I mean, still like, that's kind of like, I kind of think of poetry, like there's so much music in poetry.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you think, do you have any idea what like struck you about like that poetry early on, or just like, why you feel like it kind of like opened up the floodgates for yourself?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I could put my finger on it. It was just kind of like, it was just this, I don't know. It was just like something inside of me that wanted to come out and Like, I needed to express myself. And this is, like, as a young child. Like, I just, you know, just, I think, like, I was so, and I still am, very enchanted by the world, you know? And just, like, you know, we were homeschooled and we, like, you know, I just feel like we really had, like, a lot of time to just dream and, like, a lot of boring time to, like, doing, you know, where most kids would be at school, we would be not at school.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really, like, a very structured homeschooling. It was not that at all. So it was, like, you know, and eventually, like, when I got a little older, I was going to, like, a one-day week school. But then, for the most part, it was just, you know, a lot of, like, honestly, I guess just being outside and, yeah, just being outside and, like, just dreaming. I just had, like, very vivid, you know, just I was in awe of everything. Yeah. And I still am.
Yeah.
Sort of. Sometimes. I mean, now it's just colored with lots of more understanding of the complexities.
It feels like that enchantment is still, like, alive, though, even in the songs, like, on this record, you know? Mm. There's obviously, like, a heavy weight to some of it too, but it feels like you're still, like, into the mystical and, like, I don't know, the mystery and the magic of the world, like, aside from the heavy.
Yeah, I think also, like another thing that, like, if I'm trying to explain, like, I guess what I'm trying to explain, which is hard to explain, but it's like, it's not just, like, the mystery and the magic, it's like the dumb stuff, the not like to say dumb stuff, but just like the monotonous stuff, the like the mystery and the magic within the, like, just everyday things that people do.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
it's the, you know, like in the Chaparral Bottoms when you're talking about going to the DMV and things like that. Like, those are I don't know, those are, like, the lines that I, like, really find myself attaching to now, of, like, the ones that are maybe, like, a little bit more mundane or maybe just, like, really simple and just everyday life stuff that someone is able to, like, deliver in a way that makes you latch on, or, you know, even if you weren't there, you can, I don't know, maybe picture yourself there. Or I find, like, with your songs that it's, like, that I feel like you do such a good job of, like, painting a picture with the words. And just the imagery is, like, always, like, pretty strong. And it's just like, all right, I feel like I can be in this place with you,
cool.
You know, without, like, really having to try. It just kind of so happens, cool. You know, it's, like, very transcendent.
That makes me so happy.
When did the poetry kind of transform into songwriting?
We did, when we were very young, we wrote a couple songs. They were just terrible. One of them was called I'm Living in a Dream World. But I would say, like, it started, like, I started writing songs. So we were, like, in this Shakespeare play that happened once a year. And it was part of, like, our homeschooling crew.
Okay.
Well, it was our homeschooling crew. And it was part of our, like, yearly curriculum, really, was this Shakespeare play that would happen. So, like, at least 6 months out of the year were dedicated to the play. And yeah, that definitely had a big impact on my creativity and, like, and also my writing, I would think. You know, I love Shakespeare. I'm a huge Shakespeare nerd. You know, even if you don't understand what the heck that person's trying to say, I say that person because there's no true knowledge of the gender of William Shakespeare.
Oh, Will.
Whatever. But, but yeah, like, I never got a speaking role, which I was like, I wanted a speaking role so bad, and I wasn't a very good student. And so the teacher, like, didn't want to give me like speaking roles because she wanted me to focus on my homework, which I didn't really do. And I was just like, no, I just want to be a performer. Like, you know,
yeah.
I like just I wanted that so badly. I just remember it was just like everything to me as a child was like, oh, like the stage and, you know. And I mean, I was also terrified of it, which I think I still am. But one year when I was 14 and my sister, my older sister, she had like the lead roles in the play, which was awesome. Like I wasn't really like, it's not like I was like jealous of my sister, but like it was cool to see her do it. You know, I think that was like a big inspiration for me and probably why I wanted to do it.
Yeah. I was going to say more inspiration than jealousy there. Like, oh, this is so rad. She's doing this. Yeah. Like I want to find my place in this.
Yes. And so for Midsummer, she was Puck, and my teacher wrote in I was part of the acting troupe. So she wrote in a part for me, which she did because there were so many like kids that we were homeschooled with. So she wrote in, I was the Nightingale in the acting troupe in A Midsummer's Night Dream, if you're familiar with that play at all.
Yeah.
And so she wrote in like a singing part for me. And it was like, I sang the song, about, it was called The Nightingale, and my sister did a dance. Like the stage was just like me and her, and she was dancing. And and I sang for the first, that was the first time I'd ever sang on a stage. And like after that performance, it was like, I mean, I had no idea that I could sing. I had no idea. And I wasn't really interested in that. I was interested in acting. And so everybody after the show was like, oh, your song was so beautiful, you know? And I was like, what about my acting, you know? But from that point on, like, I think my dad started taking us to these open mics.
Okay.
And then, just seeing people play guitar and write songs. I don't even know what happened at that point. Like it was just, I got a guitar and it only had one string on it. My dad gave me this. It was a guitar at the antique market. And so we would go to the antique market with my dad like once a week, every Sunday. And up until that point, I guess I was still going with him. So there was this guitar that had one string on it, and I would just like sit in the back of his van and like play this one. You know, like when you get a guitar and you're like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I just do that for hours.
That's awesome. But you like, when you did sing for that role that you had, did that like make you want to lean into that more, even though you like wanted to act? Or was it like not really up until going to these open mics and kind of seeing people do the thing that you gravitated towards that even more?
I think like, I mean, I was picked on a lot, and you know, confidence wise, you know, pretty low as a child. And so like definitely like getting that feedback from everybody of like, you're so good at this. Like, I was like, oh, I'm good at something.
Okay.
What? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that was like a huge thing for me. I always sang like my whole life. I would sing. Yeah. Actually, I forgot about that. Yeah. I've sang my whole life as like, I remember when my grandma died, I think I was like 7. Like whenever I was sad, I would just go by myself in the backyard and I would just sing these like songs too. Like I totally forgot about this. But yeah, I would like just, so singing has always been like this special thing. But yeah, I'd say like the open mics, like actually saw like somebody who's one of my closest friends to this day, Sharon Little, who's an incredible vocalist, just in one of the best vocalists out there, possibly. She's amazing. And I saw her sing and she played the song. And that was like, I just went to the stairway and just cried. And then after that, I started writing songs. And then I started also performing at the open mic. And I guess, again, like, to, like, I do in a way, like, I think about music that, like, it kind of saved me because I was a teenager and that shit was hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to be a teenager. And it, like, I was going through so, like, a lot of, you know, teenage stuff. And then music kind of came around and it was this thing that I could do and I could express myself. And also, like, people were, it was like, I was finally, for the first time in my life, getting, like, you know, like, you're really good at this.
A little validation from people that are seeing you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So not only were you, like, you loved the expression, but also felt like people were like, yeah, you are really good at this and you should keep pursuing this. And
yeah.
Did it always feel like a comfortable way for you to process the world then through the writing?
Yes. And like, I mean, I think like still to this day, like with songwriting, like it's not entire, like sometimes I like joke about how songwriting's like, or like, you know, releasing music's like giving birth. I mean, it's obviously nothing like giving birth. Like I say that and then I'm like, moms. Like, but yeah, like I feel like sometimes it's really uncomfortable to write songs, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What about it makes it uncomfortable for you, I guess? Like, where do you find the discomfort in it? Because obviously there's like a lot of good ways to like process things through it, but what is the downside or the uncomfortable part for you?
I mean, I guess like sometimes you come up with stuff that, I guess it's really just like when you are your worst enemy, when you're judging yourself as you're writing music. I just took a songwriting class with Adrian Lanker.
Okay.
And that was such a incredible class. I was sick the whole entire month that it was happening. So I was like in this weird, like hadn't left my house bubble, like working on songs like through Adrian Lanker's like coaching, you know. I want to rewatch. I have the recordings and I want to rewatch it. But like one thing that was touched upon was like that, you know, like as you're writing songs, like doing the comparison thing, you know, where you're like, this isn't as good as that person's song. And like, if it's not that good, then what's the point of doing, you know,
the thief of joy.
Yeah.
That comparison.
Yeah. So I'd say like that. And also like just sometimes like I have these like kind of like weird, I kind of call it or think of it. I don't really call it anything, but like I think of it as like songwriting fits, where like some of the songs, like some of the recent songs that I've been writing, I'll be working on them for like, let's say 3 days straight. And like, I feel terrible for my roommates because that's literally all, like, I'll just be like, it's like obsessively, like I can't stop working on it. And it'll be like 3 days where I did it also just quit smoking cigarettes. But when I was smoking cigarettes, like it would be like, I'd be like working on the song, go outside, smoke cigarettes, like come back, like, like it's like, just like kind of like so uncomfortable in the sense that like you kind of become obsessed with it. And like, and then it's like fitting the pieces together. And then like, and you know, when something's not quite right.
Yeah.
And then kind of like knowing that like, okay, this isn't quite right, so I'm not going to like say that this is finished yet. like I'm still wrestling. Like that's how it feels. It's like I'm wrestling with a song. Like, no, you gotta come on, a couplet right here. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how it feels.
That's amazing. So is there like a time where have you found that it's important for you to step away from, like, when you are, even when you are in that like obsessive period of time?
I can't.
You just can't.
No, like I'll be like, I'll go out, you know, like let's say I go out, I'll just like the whole time I'm driving have like the voice memo and I'll just be like, repeat.
Like, and will you just like stay in that space until you do feel like it is done?
That's what I mean. That has happened recently in probably like a handful of songs that I've written that I'm so excited about. And that will be like the outcome is that like I'll just feel like at a certain point I'm like, it's perfect. Like it's exactly, you know what I mean? And it does have this feeling of like it's everything that I wanted, you know?
So that obsessiveness is getting you the results that you want.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen all the time. So it's kind of like when it happens, I just have to like go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
but it's not like the only way that songs are coming about,
but there are
those bouts where it's just like, this is all I can think about and I'm not going to not think about it until it's done.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of like, yeah, definitely. And also like in that class, you know, I mean, songwriting is something like for me, I want to learn how to think about it in a lot of different ways. I want to learn how to do it in a lot of different ways. And like, that's why that class was really cool because there are, you know, and also like one thing that I'm not so great at that I'd like to get better at is like, and I used to do this all the time. Like I would write all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I have been writing a lot more since that class, but something that she kind of like was putting out there is like, you know, wake up and do a free write. Like just make that part of your life.
Yeah.
Doing free writes, you know?
Just forcing yourself to write a little bit.
Yeah. Just like, you know, and also that like taking care of yourself, like, physically, emotionally, like in all the ways, like that can also like really harvest like some beautiful work.
Yeah.
I mean, but who's to say that, you know, there's that so part, many writers that don't do that.
I think that part's hard to understand too.
Yeah.
It's just like, or to even make space for it sometimes where you're like, yeah, but I'm being so productive and I'm like doing all these things and I'm like constantly writing. It's just like, well, maybe if you took care of yourself, you'd have something different to say or like a different approach to this thing.
Yeah. Your mind would be clearer to access the thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
But overall, sounds like the homeschooling experience like gave you a lot of room to just like explore creativity pretty constantly.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. You know, it's really interesting, like, you know, thinking about how your life might have been, you know, had I gone to school.
Yeah.
You know, like there's things that I maybe wish that I had experienced or had those skill sets of people that went to school and you know that was like centered, you know, in their life. And then there's just, you know, it's not like I want to change things because it really did I think let me foster my creativity and kind of become who I am.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't know how I would be otherwise,
for sure,
you know.
Got to imagine
so,
that.
So curious about it, though. Like, if there's, like, a, you know, dual, what's that called? Like, the realities on
parallel
top.
Parallel universe.
Yeah, parallel universe. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, no.
There's a parallel universe of me, like, I don't know, maybe I was a cheerleader. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I would imagine, no doubt, that has cool. to, like, shape your lens for, like, the way you think about songwriting and the way that you've like pursued your art and things like that, for sure.
Yeah.
What do you think is like maybe, I don't know, is there, has there been things that you have found like the hardest things to like maybe integrate into like as you've gotten older, like thinking about like the homeschooling, like, and how that shaped your psyche? Like, are there particular things that you can like identify?
Security, like, but like it's hard, it's, that's hard, that's a hard question, or it's, I don't know, like it's like hard to answer because it's like I think that like being an artist, I don't know, I just have kind of always like been on the fringe, like in the sense of like, you know, my first apartment I lived in, it was a closet and I paid $125 a month. Then I lived in a punk house and I paid, I think, $180 a month. And then it eventually went up to $250.
Yeah.
And then I lived in the desert and I paid, you know, I've always paid really cheap rent. And that's always been like a, because I travel a lot and like, you know, have been part of like a lot of DIY scenes and that like, I'd say like, I've kind of grown up in the mindset of like, as much as I can to like, I mean, I want to say anti-capitalism, but I'm a huge participant, you know, in it. We all are.
Hard not to be.
Yeah, we are in, you know, but in a certain sense, like I have lived my life in ways that's like kind of going against that, and it's, I'm just like, so I guess like I don't want to say that that was because I was homeschooled, but I think that there's, and I'm curious about this as far as like the way I perceive like, you know, oh, you go to school and then you go to college and then you get a job. You know what I mean? For me, it was like, oh, I learn how to write songs. I join a band. You know what I mean? And that also has to do with like, I don't necessarily think it's homeschooling, but just my parents and how they kind of, they weren't, my mom put a little bit of pressure on me to, like, I didn't get my high school diploma until COVID, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Like my mom, and my mom was upset about that. But my dad is never, he's pushed me into doing music. And yeah, so, I don't know if that makes sense, but I feel like that, and that again is my perception of like this classic, like way of, you know, I guess like America, it's like, but I know that a lot of people obviously in public school also are against that grain.
Yeah.
You know,
but I think like your experience must have maybe made it easier for you to not like fall into that trap if you didn't want that to be your life,
yes.
You know, because like, I think when exactly. It is more structured or like you are going to like, you know, a public or a privatized like school system, like it very much is like,
right.
You go to here and then you go to college and then you
right.
get the job and then you have a family. And like,
yeah.
I think like all that shit's like put upon you, even if that's not really what you want,
yeah.
You know, where
yeah.
like maybe with like the way things happen for you, it made it easier for you to not like, it made you feel like you could explore the world differently and could go pursue your art in different parts of the country. And like, mm-hmm. you get to have all of these like experiences that like really shape your world that you don't get out of like something that is so structured, I think.
Yeah, like even having tests and having that pressure of like grades, which I did have some tests and grades and stuff, but you know, there wasn't like a, it just, the pressure wasn't as large. So I would say like getting older and being an artist, like I will say it is kind of scary. It's scary, like, because I have no security and it does not pay very much.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how much it doesn't pay.
Yeah. Understood.
It's a little shocking. Like, you're, you know, and it's like, but I just have this, like, thing inside of me that's, like, stubbornly, like, no, this is what I want to do. And I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And, like, so I would say that, like, being homeschooled, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely grateful to that. And then also there's like this part of me that's like, ooh, some security sure would be nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, gosh, if I had gone to college. Ooh. And it's like, I just, like, I feel like there's people I know that I feel like could relate. But it's like, if you've like been an artist and kind of relied on that as your source of income, or you've worked all these like seasonal jobs mm-hmm. in order to be an artist,
keep things afloat,
to keep things afloat. It's like you make a lot of money doing something and then live the rest of the year off of that, you know, which that has been, you know, something I previously have done for a long time, that you kind of like, you don't know how to get a job, you know, and people will say things to you like, just get a job, you know, and you're like, but if I do that, then I know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you know, I feel very capable in getting jobs. I could do that and I'd probably kick ass.
You're here,
at any job.
You're making it, you know? You made it this far.
But I don't want to.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But I started selling sterling silver.
Yeah, I mean, I loved seeing your merch table just like full of like jewelry and like things like that. I think is pretty sweet. And I feel like it's like, I don't know, this is like representation of like who you are. It's like, I have my shirts for, and then I also have all of this jewelry
all
stuff too.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think that's like, there's magic in like the freedom too, that maybe the way you've gotten to live your life too, of just, you know, when maybe you do have all of like this full-time job or something, you know, you can't just like, I'm gonna go live here for a couple months or like hang out with these people for a few months. Like, you miss out on those experiences,
right?
Too.
Yeah, totally. And I think like somewhere in there, like what's coming to my mind that I don't know how to vocalize is that like, that is a privilege.
Absolutely.
You know, that is definitely something that I'm like, that is a privilege.
Yeah.
That I have gotten to pursue my life this way.
Yeah. And maybe it's a trade-off for that security.
Right.
But
exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't homeschooled, but I feel like the last few years has kind of given me maybe like the experience of that, where like for most of my life I had this job that was like a very steady income. I knew where the check was coming from. And then like 3 years ago, I bailed on it and just to like pursue this and like other forms of art and like things within the music industry. And like, it certainly is like a trade-off, you know. Mm-hmm. There are some days where I'm like, damn, that that monthly check was pretty sick.
Yeah, totally.
But then also to like think about like, you know, the times where it's a week before something happens and someone's like, hey, do you want to come on the road with us for like a couple weeks? It's like, fuck yeah, I do.
Right.
And there's no way I could have done that if I had this other thing. And
like,
those trade-offs, you know, they balance out for sure. And they've
absolutely,
you know, that freedom has definitely like enriched my life, as scary as it is sometimes thinking about security. It's I think it's worth it.
I do too. Cheers.
Hell yeah. Thinking about the songwriting, how much, you know, it sounds like you've gotten to live your life in some different places. How much do you feel like environment inspires you or has shaped maybe the songs that you've written over the years?
Yeah, definitely environment has shaped You know, I think like, I'm trying to think of like places, like when I lived in Philly, I think just being part of the like punk scene that I was a part of in Philly, and that environment, you know, and those houses and like squats, like that environment, I feel like definitely shaped songs for me. Not that I don't write punk music, though I'd like to.
It's a spirit someday, though, right?
Yeah, it's a spirit. Yeah. And then Joshua Tree, like, forget about it. I don't even know what to say. Like, yeah, don't know what to say. Joshua Tree, like, I've been missing it. Like, I can't even explain. Like, the past 2 days I've been like closing my eyes and it's almost like I'm there. And it's like I am there. It's like my heart is there. And I need to go back to the desert. And I really would like to soon. But that place, because I started going to Joshua Tree when I was 21 and I'm 38. So before I lived there, I had gone there, like spent a month, a year in Joshua Tree for about 8 years before I moved there.
Okay.
So it's been like this place for me. And really that's not too long after I started writing songs. You know, I mean, so it definitely, yeah, just that place and the freedom that is there in just the space.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. I was just talking to somebody about this, of just, especially living in the Pacific Northwest the last 10 years of my life, or 11 years now, being around such like dense forest versus like being out in a place like Joshua Tree in this big open desert, where with the forest, you know, there's so much and it's so dense with trees, and then you get out to the desert and you can see for miles and miles. Mm-hmm. And like, it feels like you can see forever.
Yes.
Out there.
Yeah.
And it's such a different experience. And yeah, it's also like, yeah, it's hilarious because I grew up in Southern California, probably like hour and a half away from Joshua Tree.
No way.
I never went until I moved up here. It took moving up here, and some friends were going on a trip out there and invited me, and I was just in disbelief that I grew up an hour and a half from this place and had
never
spent any time in Corona, California. It's in like Corona. Riverside.
Yeah.
Riverside, okay. County.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine like if it, cause it does start getting desert-esque in, yeah, Riverside, right?
Yeah. It's inland. So there's some mountains, but it's still pretty dry, and there's definitely like, there's some areas that feel, mm-hmm, that can feel deserty, and it certainly like doesn't take driving too far,
yeah,
to get into like deeper desert for, yeah, sure.
Right.
But yeah, that place just blew my mind. It did all so of the amazing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always curious about like people that, you know, go to a certain place and feel more inspired to write, or maybe like write differently than, mm-hmm, than when you're in your home, or,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really, really interesting, like for songwriting, you know, like, so also Ireland is a place that I feel really inspired to, like, just thinking about it in like places have this, like, you know, it's almost like you can like, you feel the energy of the place and it like conjures up images.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you feel like is the most vulnerable part of songwriting? Is it the actually performing the songs, or is it what you were maybe talking about earlier, where you kind of have like this inner critic and the comparison and things like that?
I would say that there's something about like the sharing, because like, I think that like with a lot of songs, like I'll just kind of write them because it's like, because you got to write, you just write them, you know? And then when you go to share it, like being like, ooh, that's some personal stuff I just shared.
Yeah.
And then it's just kind of like, well, I'm just going to totally reveal myself.
Yeah.
To everybody.
You're certainly doing that, you know? through the songs, it feels like.
So I think like not like I don't really think about that until later, you know, and then so it's like the afterthought of being like, whoa, guess that's all out there now. Didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not that you're not writing to share, but you kind of are. You're writing because you have to write it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the like being an artist that is putting music out in the world, you're like, oh, yeah. So people are going to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd say, yeah, I'd say something in the sharing. That's the vulnerable part.
So what were your feelings around putting this December 32nd record that just came out?
Well, it does actually feel very vulnerable, this record, because a few reasons. Well, a couple of reasons. So 7 of the songs that are on the record, I previously released under a different artist name.
Okay.
And and then 3 of the songs are, 2 of the songs are like of the past couple years. And then 1 of the songs was recorded in 2017 about my friend Dave DePorris, who passed away.
This is the String Breaker song.
The String Breaker song.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Such a killer jam.
Oh, thanks so much. And that song feels incredibly vulnerable because it's about Dave DePorris, who like we met and we played 3 shows together. We went on this little like mini tour and we just connected. It was like meeting my best friend for life. We stayed up all night talking till the sun came up the last time I saw him. And then we parted ways and I went up to a mountain in Northern California without reception for a week. And I had texted him before I went and left reception and I came back off the mountain and found out that he had died and had a text message from him after I found out that he had died, telling me to enjoy the adventures of life and to follow, you know, we had had this conversation about being an artist, and what it means to be an artist.
Yeah.
And, he was very like devil's advocate in our conversation. And so a lot of the things I had to say, he would be like, but like, just kind of like showing me other things. And he was saying like, you know, I can play devil's advocate, but like, you know, ultimately, it's the adventures we're going to remember when life is over. Right. And that's what he said. And it was like, so anyway, that song, I coincidentally was going to be in New York City. Like I was on a tour. I was flying out like 3 days later to go. I flew to Nashville, which was when the totality, the eclipse happened. And I was flying to Nashville and starting this tour. And coincidentally, I was in New York City for his memorial. So the funny thing about me and Dave was that he knew all the same people that I knew in New York City.
Okay.
Because of the Sidewalk Cafe open mic. We both went there, but at different time periods. So we had all the same friends. So coincidentally, I was playing a show in New York a day before his memorial. And I was able to stay for his memorial. And there was like an opportunity to sign up to play a song for him. Like to either write a song for him or play one of his songs. And I had been wanting to write a song and I couldn't write the song. I just was like, I was so devastated over his loss. And it was so weird because we barely knew each other. But it was just bizarre. You know, it was like I hadn't. And so the day before his memorial, I was like, and it was weird in the sense that like after he passed, I had a lot of very vivid dreams about him and him. Really, it was like he was, it felt like he was with me.
Yeah.
And it was like I heard this voice saying, "You already wrote the song." And I'm like, "What? You already wrote the song?" "No, I didn't." Like, it was like that. And then I open up my journal, and the night that I had met him, the night that he played, I literally, while he was on stage playing, I cried because it was so beautiful. And I wrote a poem while he was playing. And also I wrote down a couple things he said on stage, which the thing, it said this song, he said, "This song's going to be a string breaker." And so that's what the song is, you know, that's the opening line of the song. And so anyways, I wrote that song in one day and performed it the next day. And coincidentally ran into, like, so coincidentally, I went to a show that a friend texted me. My friend was in New York City also. And was like, "I saw you're in New York. I'm in New York. I'm going to the show. Do you want to come? I have a plus one ticket." So I went to the show completely randomly, run into Shahzad. Shahzad is Molly, who recorded the song. Turns out, so we ran into each other at the show and discover that we're both friends with Dave. And I tell him that I wrote the song, and he said, "Come to the studio and record it." So it was recorded, like, it was written in one day. So as far as, like, editing that happens with songwriting, yeah. You know how I was telling you, like, wrestling with a song until it's perfect? That was, none of that happened with that song. It was just, like, that song was recorded, or written and recorded 2 days later in one take. So
is that the recording that we hear on this record?
That's the recording you hear on the record.
So how long ago was that then?
2017.
Damn.
Yeah, 2017. And the violins were, I did add the violins to the recording just this past summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that one of the tracks that had been previously released on under the other project? This is like one of the songs that had never been put out before.
Never been released, yeah.
So what, I don't know, what made you feel like it fit with this group of songs? Or like why now? Like what made it feel good to put it out now?
I mean, like, it's really there's a lot of things that went into, like, the whole decision of releasing these songs, like re-releasing those songs and then releasing the three songs that I released. Part of it has to do with being resourceful as an artist that can't afford to record, release music all on my own, you know what I mean? So part of it's like, I have these recordings that nobody's heard.
Yeah.
It would behoove me to release music into the world. So why would I not release music into the world? But still, I wasn't really gonna, that song, I didn't really know what to do with it. I really honestly didn't know what to do with the song, but a mutual friend of that I met at Dave's memorial, who we've remained close, which there's a handful of people that I've remained close to after the memorial. And he came to see me in New York City. And every time I see him, he says, "Play String Breaker. It's a great song. You know, why don't you ever play that song?" And so I guess it kind of got, I had seen him and that we had that conversation, and I was like, you know, and I don't know. I just, and also it's been like this, I don't know. Like, I think that, like, losing people, I think there's like this, I don't know if you can relate to this, but like, you're almost holding on to it by holding it close. Like, it's like, you're not ready to, like, put it out.
Yeah.
You're not ready to let it go.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it makes sense, because it's totally like that thing with songs and art, like, once you do put it out, like, a lot of artists will say that, like, "Oh, that's no longer mine. It's like for the world," or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
However you want to, like, state that thing. So that makes sense to, like, want to keep that thing close to you so that it yeah. remains yours.
I think that, like, like, and I still feel this way about like everything that like meeting him and losing him meant to me was like, I still am learning from that experience. And I've wanted to, and I want to write more songs based on everything I learned from that. And I guess like, yeah, I also have, it's almost like I've been waiting to honor him until I felt like I had learned what I was supposed to.
That's very cool.
You know?
Yeah. I, before I knew any of that, because it's you talked about that a bit at the release show before you played that song, and I didn't have any context for the song, but it was definitely like one of the songs on the record that stood out to me. It was one of my favorites. But, and I was gonna at, like, before knowing any of that, I was gonna ask you just about recording vocals and capturing raw emotion,
right?
Because that was kind of the track to me. I was like, damn, there's, this feels so incredibly raw. And like, I just like, I think across the board, like on that particular record, but that particular track, just like the vocal captures are so good.
Thanks.
And I was going to ask you like, oh, what's it like to like, how do you tap into that raw emotion, like in a recording studio? But then I heard your story and I was just like, oh, well, there's no like, I don't feel like there's a switch you have to like flip to do that with a song like that. Like when it comes from that sort of place, and then, you know, finding out that you recorded that song like so quickly after it, it happened and where it came from. I was just like, well, that answers that question for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a beautiful one.
Thank you. That's definitely one of my favorites. Good to hear. Cause I like, I feel like the vocal performance of that song, I've felt, that's like, I felt like, oh, it's not perfect. And I'm such a perfectionist with vocals. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, no, like I said, it stood out. And yeah, I'm sure that's always like a fine line to toe of like, I want perfection, but I want it to feel real too.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Was it, are you often like writing in real time, or like writing while someone else is on stage? Are you inspired like that often, or was that kind of like a one-off thing?
You know, it depends. It definitely depends, but yes, like I definitely sometimes, when, if something's like inspiring me so much, sometimes I just have to write. And then I've also found that like when I have that inclination, sometimes I say like, no, be present. Just give this all of your attention instead of being in your own head. It's something I think I struggle with a lot, is being present.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
You know, even if you are present, it's like the thought, you know, you can't stop the thoughts.
I mean, it's like certainly become part of my process for, you know, preparing for these types of conversations, but I'm very much like the weirdo at shows that is like taking notes the whole time, because like I don't want to forget things that like spoke to me,
right?
But that there also is this this part of me that's like, just fucking watch the thing,
right?
It's just like, but I want to remember all these moments that I want to talk to you about, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So was it I don't know, are you like surprised about how this record comes together and all these songs kind of coming from different times in your life, and that it all kind of made sense to, I don't know, put together as this collection of tunes?
It's so like, so the last record that I released also, Desert Car.
Yeah.
That also is a similar thing where it's like, I think 6 of the songs were recorded with one producer, and then like 2 of the songs were recorded with another producer. 1 of the songs was recorded with somebody else, and then another song or 2 other songs were recorded with another producer.
Yeah.
And I think that like, you know, I've been an independent artist at this point. I am working with a great record label, American Standard Times.
Great or
American
label.
Standard Time.
Love American Standard Time.
Yeah. But as far as having like, you know, recordings, like a budget for recording, it's like something I've always had to have been and have to be like, you know, creative with.
Yeah.
I actually really like it because I get to work with, like, it kind of pushes me to collaborate with people. You know what I mean? And like, if somebody's like, hey, I really would love to record with you, you know, it's like, let's do it. You know, even if it's one song, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't have to feel like you're tied in, like, no, I already decided to make a record with this one person.
Yeah. So I've never, I mean, actually that's not true. I guess like in my younger recordings, I have worked with producers like throughout the whole experience, like with my band that I was in with my sisters three, we had recorded two records like that, and I am currently working on a record in Asheville with a producer, like the whole thing's going to be recorded there.
Okay.
But as far as like the way these songs kind of came together, I guess I was really nervous about it, to be honest with you. I was like, oh, because the seven songs, like there's a handful of the songs that I just love the songs and I love the recordings. And I recorded those seven songs with Gene Avaro Jr. And Joshua Tree, who's an incredible producer, incredible artist. But some of the songs I'm like, oh, like a little cringy, like, you know, and you're just kind of like, oh, that's like my like younger songwriting that I now, as like a more mature songwriter, I'm like, oh, that's like my young stuff. Oh, that's embarrassing, kind of.
Because it spans so wide.
Yeah. So like there's like that was like a thing that I honestly I'm still getting over. Like knowing that people are listening to the record and don't necessarily know that those are my older songs. You know, like I'm putting it out there, but somebody who's just finding it on Spotify is not going to like know that, you know, or wherever they stream.
Yeah. I didn't know that listening to the record.
Right.
To me, it's like you could have written all these songs last year.
Yeah.
I think that's hopefully a good thing.
I think it's cool. Yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It makes me excited to put out my new stuff because I bet it's going to be so much better. But I mean, there's only a couple songs on the record that I'm like, oh, that, you know, but honestly, it's cool. And like, the Chaparral Bottoms, I recorded that with Kyle Kraft.
Dude, that fucking song rules. That's so good. I've listened to that song like every day since I found it.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
And also, you know, it's like the opening to the record.
Yeah.
And it's just that song.
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, Kyle, like that's got a cool story in the sense that, so the song is about Victoria Williams. She's one of my heroes, one of my best friends. And I lived with her in Joshua Tree and, so it's about my relationship with her and things we've said, you know, conversations, walks we've gone on and, you know, things that she says. She's got like all the best sayings. Like she's got like all, I started keeping a list of like Vic sayings. And, so she is from Shreveport, Louisiana. And then it was just funny because when I left Joshua Tree, and moved to Portland, you know, I was in a relationship. We had broken up and I ended up going to stay temporarily with, some friends, Lydia and Kyle. And then they were like, we love you. We think you should move in. And I was like, okay. And it turns out that Lydia's from Shreveport and Kyle's from Vidalia, which is also in Louisiana. And so it was just so funny that like now I'm living again with like these like kin, like just like, you know, same with Vic. It's like you're like my people, you know, and I'm living with them again. And they're from Shreveport. And then they moved back to Shreveport and I went to visit and me and Kyle were going to record a song, but I didn't know what song we were going to record. And I kind of was like, oh, there's this one, and then there's this one. And then he was like, oh, what's that? What's the Chaparral Bottoms? And I was like, oh my gosh, we need to record this here because Vic's from Shreveport and we're in Shreveport, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that felt really special.
Such a killer team.
Yeah. And then also, like the way it was named December 32nd,
mm-hmm.
Is because Vic's birthday is December 23rd and Dave DePoris's birthday is December 23rd. And so just reversed it.
Flipped it.
Flipped it. That's how.
So did it kind of feel like this puzzle for you to, I don't know, like find the sequencing for these songs that had been written over such like a large span of time? And like, is that a part of the process that you really enjoy?
To be honest, I wouldn't say I enjoy it, but it is a puzzle. Yeah. Like that's almost one thing where it's like, I wish I had like another person in my creative world that was invested in it as much as I am, you know, that was like, I'm going to help you decide the track order, you know, but for me, I wanted it. It felt good to be like the old songs on the second half of the record and the newer songs. And that's actually how it was done, was like the newest song with Chaparral, second newest, Weed Money,
okay.
who I recorded with Christopher Bernard Cook from the Silver Triplets
okay.
of the Rio Honda.
Yeah.
Such an incredible musician and just so good. And then, yeah, so String Breaker, and then it was the seven songs. And for me, that's like, I just, in my brain, that's the only way it could happen. You know,
just made sense for you that way.
Yeah. I couldn't mix them like this one from this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very sweet record.
Thank you. Yeah,
I love it. And it's always fun to not really know too much about something when you give it its first couple listens. And like, yeah, like I said, I would have no idea that these songs span so long or just, you know, where they come from necessarily. But I do love your storytelling through the lyrics.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, your voice is so good.
Thank you.
Do you have, I don't know, like when you think about lyrics, what do you feel like has informed your style of delivering those things over the years?
What has informed my style?
Yeah, or like, I don't know, when you sit down to write, or is it kind of just like what you were talking about earlier, that it's like as much the everyday life stuff as much as the significant maybe things that happen in your daily life that end up on the page?
I think it's mostly like when I want to write, like it will like come from like I'll be like having a conversation with somebody who I love, and like they'll say something to me, and it's almost like it's just like collecting these moments,
yeah,
like with people or interactions, you know, or sometimes like that, in the sense of like almost like that is mundane. It's like these like moments of like just, I mean, not that it's mundane to like have these conversations with people you love, but like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
it's like those little things that
just
stick
small
with you
things, and... you know? I have been listening to this record, by Matt Mitchell, who's also on American Standard Time.
Okay.
I just am like, he's got this line about, like where he talks about 7-Eleven on 2nd and Division. Like to me, like, okay, well, first of all, I have been listening to this record and I'm just like obsessed with the songwriting. Like I'm like, Matt's my friend, you know, but like after like really diving into the record, like I feel like I'm going to be like, hey, Matt, what's up?
Just very revealing.
You're a really good fucking songwriter, dude. Like, oh.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's so good. And, like, yeah, it was just, it's like lines like that, like, you know, there's a 7-Eleven at 2nd and Division where all of the hard luck falls. Damn.
Yeah.
That's, like, got such a punch to it. And it's, like, so, I mean, I don't know. I strive to write, like, I it's just funny because I feel like in his songwriting, I can really relate to the way he writes songs because I think that I like to write songs in that same way where it's, like, something everybody knows about, you know? Everyone knows about 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
You know, well, I guess not everywhere across the world, but let's say
it's a pretty universal thing. Or
is it?
Or even if you, I don't know. I feel like even if you replaced that with like the corner store.
The corner store.
It has the same effect.
Right.
Or
yes.
Like, you know, when people reference even very particular places that I don't have any reference for.
Right.
It's there's something about that.
Right.
That sticks heavy.
Yeah. And also, like, you were asking about environment. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, yeah, like the environment of the corner store.
Yeah.
As that being like, so like about like, you know, being somebody who travels, like, it's like you're constantly seeing these clips of like, you know what I mean? Like you're going to the grocery store in random cities. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going, let's say you're going to the gym in random cities. Mm-hmm. If you're really, you're really.
No, but all of those things right. For yourself, I feel like when you are traveling, even those things that may be feel mundane or just every day. They pack a different punch.
Yeah, because it's like more exciting.
Yeah. You've got exactly. New eyes for those things. Exactly. Or like their fresh experiences. Like, well, I went to the coffee shop in this small town that I've never been to before. And the woman at the counter said something to me.
Right.
That was maybe like insignificant, but it stuck with you.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. So I think that like definitely has like a little sprinkle of something on how I like to write songs, you know?
Yeah. It feels like that to me, like listening to the songs, even if, you know, maybe you feel like your songwriting has evolved since writing a lot of these tunes that are on the December 32nd record. But yeah, thinking about Chaparral Bottoms and some of those things that you mentioned within the conversation, or thinking about, you know, smoking someone's weed, but you left money for it, you know, or things like that, you know?
My friend called me out on that line, though. My friend Son Little, I'd posted on Instagram, and he was like, nobody leaves money for weed. And I was like, shh. It's just a line in a song, dude.
That's the beauty of songwriting or storytelling, is that, like, sometimes you have to add a little bit to...
Yeah.
Give it some life.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's what makes you a good storyteller.
It's cool, like, because I don't really talk about songwriting that much. And I love talking about songwriting.
Like, hell yeah.
I just love it. I love thinking about it. And I feel like this is a really cool conversation because I'm getting to, like, figure things out that I've never really vocalized before.
Oh, very cool.
So it's cool.
Well, I'm glad that we have had this time together then for you to get to talk about your songwriting, because I obviously love talking about songwriting.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it always gives me a different attachment to the thing. Like, I'm going to listen to your songs differently, you know?
I'm like, I want to send you my new stuff.
You played a new jam, though, the other night, right?
I think I played a couple new jams. Yeah, I played like the song Amy's Not Recorded Yet, and I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs.
What is the feeling of playing a new song for the first time for you in front of a crowd?
Don't fuck up, don't fuck up, don't fuck up. Stay focused. Don't get distracted by anything or anyone, just stay in the song. Don't fuck up.
Yeah, you said that night that performing is it's very weird, but it's also magical.
Yeah, it is very weird, And it's actually, like, it's been cool because I haven't played with a band in a long time. So this band for this show, we had been rehearsing, which I'm like, can you just be my band? Can we just, like, go travel the world together? I loved playing with them. I mean, I've loved playing with every band that I've played with. But while we were rehearsing, you know, like, I find myself, like, I do close my eyes a lot when I perform. And, like, I really get into it when I'm playing a song. I feel it, and I'm, like, in the song. And I've been thinking about it, like, songs are these little worlds that songwriters create, these little worlds, these little images, this place. It's like a physical place that you can be in.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what I meant is, like, and I said this at rehearsal because I opened my eyes and it was like we were all there, but it felt like we were all in the song. So it felt like it's weird because it's just like you're so in it and then you open your eyes and everybody's there. But
yeah,
hopefully everybody's with you.
For sure.
In that place.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's, like, the beauty of even being an audience member when you allow yourself to, like, close your eyes when you feel compelled to.
Absolutely.
Is that you can, like, really, like, fall into something.
Oh, yeah.
And then you open your eyes, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm here. Like,
right.
I'm like, at this thing.
It's weird.
It's happening all, like, around me.
It's weird. It's weird and magical.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, it's very, like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's trippy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Just to wrap things up, where do you feel like you are at with songwriting right now, or, like, where do you feel like you see the most growth in your storytelling or your songwriting, like, at this point in your life?
What do you mean exactly? Like,
even thinking about, I don't know, some of these songs are a little bit older, and you were talking about how maybe they can even feel a little, like, some of those moments can feel a little cringy to you,
right?
Like, oh, this is immature me, or, like, right, I've matured so much, or
right,
like, the way I would deliver things is different. So, like, where do you see the biggest differences in the way you're delivering things now versus this record, or even when you started, like, getting serious about songwriting?
I think, like, when I was younger, I might have been pleased enough with a line that, like, rhymed the way I wanted it. Like, I love rhyming. Like,
yeah.
I'm, like, huge, like, little, like, rhyming nerd. Like, I'm just, like, you know, whatever. And I think that, like, there were lines that I just kind of would be satisfied with that weren't that great, that were, it was like, oh, that rhymes and I'm gonna be satisfied with that, instead of it, like, having meaning, or, like, not that it didn't have meaning, but it just, yeah, just that it didn't, like, it wasn't as personal, it wasn't as, like, taken from captured moments. Like, it was just kind of like, oh, I'm just gonna use this, it's a placeholder, and that's gonna be all right.
Yeah.
So I think, like, I mean, I think that potentially there are older songs that I maybe was a little bit more so just like, I just want to finish the song, you know, whereas now, like, I won't do that. And sometimes it's nice when I was just writing a song with a friend of mine, my friend Elliot, we were writing a song and it was cool. Like, 'cause, like, sometimes when you're just like, well, okay, so that's another thing. I'd love to start really branching out on being able to write songs with people and be able to, because in that process, there were some lines that I was throwing out there and I just, like, kind of saw him go, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, like, it just, like, pushing yourself to, like, have those good lines, but just have them all, like, more present, you
yeah.
know, which, like, you know, whatever, you can't, maybe you can't, but maybe if you practice a lot, you could.
Yeah.
you know.
I'm sure over time too, like you're always like setting a new bar for like what you feel good about too.
Yeah.
And like what you're willing to let kind of like fall by the wayside, like this maybe isn't good enough to hang forever. Like,
yeah, you don't make the cut.
Yeah. It's also some patience, I'm sure, too.
Yeah. What do you mean patience?
Like, just as far as like maybe like if you were more willing before to just be like, well, this rhymes really well, like maybe having the patience to like find the right words.
Right.
Now,
I think that like one thing I realized somewhere along the way, and I totally realized this, and I feel like it changed things for me as a songwriter. Like, sometimes you want to say the thing, right? And you're doing it and it's not working. It's just not working. And you're just like, it's just not working. And I think that's what I mean about the wrestling thing is like, yeah. What I've come to realize is like, if you want to say a thing, you can say it. You just have to figure out, okay, this word isn't working. Like, it's almost like I would think, like, I don't, I only speak English. I'd love to learn how to speak another language. I would love to learn how to speak another language. And like, I guess when, and like just dabbling, and trying to speak Spanish, like, one thing that I've always liked is it makes you think about things differently. Because you're like putting different, like things are plural, things are feminine, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You have to think about it differently. And I feel like I guess what I'm trying to say about like sometimes with songwriting is that like if you can think about it differently and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Language is really interesting.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Love to learn how to speak another language.
Yeah, that would Goals. Be, that'd be great. I'm goals. Sure that would really shift the way right? you think about songwriting too.
Honestly, you know? Yeah, I can't even, wow.
Just thinking about it in a different language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for jumping on the mics with me. It's like really fun way to get to know you That's through this so conversation. Cool. And like I said, love the new record. I think you're such a great singer and songwriter. And
thank it's you.
Very cool to be at your album release. And can't encourage people enough to go check out your new record, December 32nd. Check out the one prior to, some great tunes on there. And the Calico project that you have with Kendall Lujan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put all the links in the episode notes so Thank people you. Can keep up with you. AC, we end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program.
It's a what?
It's a program.
Like not program.
Yeah, exactly. It's program. It's the way that my grandfather says the word program for some reason. It means absolutely nothing.
Oh,
it's just
adorable.
Like anytime he references the news program or like the whatever school program you're in, it's always the program.
Yeah. I love that.
So it is the one time that I will ask you to look into the camera there.
Okay.
And you can deliver it however you would like. Just the AC Sapphire. It's a program and we can properly end this thing.
Okay, cool. Okay. Well, thank you, Dan, so much for having me. Yeah, this is AC Sapphire. This has been, this is the program. Did I do that right?
It's a program.
Okay. This is AC Sapphire. It's a program.
She nailed it, everybody. It's AC Sapphire. The record is December 32nd. Links will be in the episode notes. And we're going to play it out with that Chaparral Bottoms
Yay.
Jam. And that is the Jelly Jams. And we will catch you on the flip side, Portland, or wherever you are listening from. Cool.
Cool.
We did it.
Yay.
That was great.
That was so much fun.
Hell yeah.